which is not exactly how you might expect us in terms of functions, obviously, as usual. So normally in sets, you know, complex number isomorphous to product of reals. So maybe something like that, but it hasn't been done. Something like that, in a way that makes sense, should be defined in a topos. And then the second one is to dozenize normal operators. So today we'll explain again dozenization of projection operators. Then we'll do self-adjoint operators. And maybe you can extend it to normal operators. That hasn't been done either. Then the number three is a comparison of two articles. Now, we will do a concept of a group and a topos, which is what the second article deals with. The first one is a kind of the concept of quantization. And I think that you can actually combine the two somehow and see if you can. We'll talk about it, but that is how it should be read. So you could do a review of both and then see if you can actually combine the two, which I think is possible. So you would end up with a kind of equivalent quantizations or group equivalent quantizations. And then the other three are just reviews of things that we won't cover totally. We'll cover probabilities, but not everything about them. We won't cover histories or the internal topos approach. So if you want to do a review of that. So now, I think the best is that you look at it, and then the references are all the literature, not all of them. Then you look at those references and then also the references within those. This more or less covered all the literature on topos and physics, which is, you must have guessed, is not that much. Still quite new. So in case you find something that you want to do while reading papers, then obviously just tell me. Or any questions about the project, just tell me. I mean, I will probably discuss them more as we start covering the material. So it's just that this is the first draft, so you can look at it. Okay. So today I'm going to explain a bit better the concept of dozenization and of propositions. Now, I mentioned it at the start last time, and I mean, I think I described it a bit, but I wasn't very rigorous mathematically, but I described more or less the concept. But I'll go through it again, since it's a central thing, really, in this approach. It is very important to understand this. I'll go through it again in a bit more detail, and I'll give an example. So again, the concept of a proposition. So remember, we're trying to mimic how things are defined in classical physics so as to get a realistic interpretation of the mathematics or of the objects which are described mathematically. So in classical physics, again, a proposition was just a subset of the state space. So it's all those states for which your proposition is true. So all those states S, such that the value of A at S lies in this interval. Easy. Quantum theory, we've seen that the analog of this is a projection operator. And this projects on this subset of the spectrum of A. Now we want to define a proposition in a topos. And we wanted to define such that there's a subset, sub-object of your state space. So given a proposition, we want to define a pre-sheaf, which is a sub-pre-sheaf of your state space. And again, because this is contextual definition, this sub-pre-sheaf, which we'll prove it is, will be one, at each context has to be a subset of the spectrum of that algebra. So meaning, for each context, this guy has to be a subset of the spectrum of an algebra. So how did we do this? We introduced the concept of dozenization, which basically is the following. You get your projection operator, and then you evaluate this projection operator at a certain context. So you have define it more than that. So if the projection operator belongs to V, then you just take itself. If it does not belong to V, then you coarse grain it, you generalize it. So you pick out. Now this is because the O is because it's called outer dozenization. I'll explain it in a moment. So what you do, you generalize it for that context. So you pick out an operator which belongs to that context. You pick out the smallest operator which belongs to that context and which is implied by the original one. Now this O means outer dimension. What this means is that they approximated from above. So you get the smallest, which is bigger. It's obviously going to be bigger than this guy. Now, this is opposed to inner dozenization, which is not used when defining proposition, but it will be used when defining dozenization of self-adjoint operators. What this thing is kind of the reverse. So here's a kind of upper bound, so to say. This you could see it as a lower bound in the sense that you pick the biggest projection of, well, let's call it differently, biggest projection operator in your algebra, which now implies the original one. So you kind of approximate it from below. However, for propositions, we just are going to use this one. The reason will be because this outer dozenization will A, enable us to define the Presheaf maps, and B, the definition will be such that they correspond to the process of generalizing propositions. Even this in a way, but it would doesn't work quite so well. But we will use it when defining, yeah, when defining dozenization of self-adjoint operators. But for now, we're going to use this. Okay, so for context in which you don't have your projection operator, you generalize it. And that would be the representation of that proposition for that context. And you do that for all contexts, et cetera, et cetera. So then you end up that for each context V, you get your dozenized projection operator. And then you associate a subset of your state space, which is all those elements of your state space, which now give value 1 to this generalized projection operator. And you do it for all V. Now this guy here is a topological space. In fact, it's a Hausdorff space. Do you know what Hausdorff means? Now, it turns out that this subset here actually has the property that is a Clopen subset, meaning it's both open and closed. And this is because of the following. So remember the Gelfand transform. It tells you that there is a kind of isomorphism between an algebra and all continuous maps from the spectrum to the complex. So that for each operator, you get the Gelfand transform. And what this guy does, it picks an element of the spectrum and gives you a number. And the way it defines this number is by evaluating the corresponding operator with respect to this element of the spectrum. And obviously the same is true if you have projection operators, right? For a projection operator, then you would have the Gelfand transform of this guy. And obviously, this is just 0, 1. So another way of writing this would be as follows. Now, these two are in C. This guy is a Hausdorff. So these guys, the singletons, are open, in fact they're both open and closed, and this guy here is continuous. So that the pullback of something that is open is going to be open, a pullback of something that's closed is going to be closed. And this guy here is nothing but the pullback of this. This clopen. So messy. There you go. So what you end up is that for each V, then you get a map from the lattice of projection operators on V to all this clopen, here CL is clopen, yeah, subsets of your state space. And this being a collection of subsets is a lattice. Yeah? So they include the and is just the, sorry, the or is the union, and this is the intersection and so on. So you really get for each V, you get a lattice on. This for each V. Now what we want to do is to group all these guys for each context V so as to define a presheaf. So what we want to show is that all these guys for each V can be kind of fitted together so as to define a well-defined presheaf. And because each of them at each stage is going to be a clopen subset, this presheaf here will be a clopen subobject of this guy. So is this true? So what we're going to show is that this, which is defined as the collection of all these guys for all is a subpresheaf of this guy. As a theorem. The clopenness property comes from the fact that it's clopen in each context. So I didn't write clopen. So how do you show something like that? Well, when we did subpresheaves, so remember which lesson I defined them, the definition of something being a subpresheaf was that for each context, the set which was given by this was a subset. Of this, and this is fine, yeah? We know that from the definition. The second is to do with maps. So being a presheaf, if you have an arrow in the context category, then you have a presheaf map up here. But you'll have something that goes all the way around. And for this to be a well-defined Persheaf, this F has to be basically the same map as the original one, but now restricted to act only on this. So this has to be equal to F. Is this true? Okay, so let's prove. So that we're checking this thing, if this is true. So first of all, this guy, I mean, I interchangeably write this or this are the same thing, yeah? It's still all those elements which give value 1 to this guy. It's just different notation, it's the same thing. So when, as soon as you have a V here, is a set. If you don't, it's a Persheaf. Okay, so let's assume that this guy does belong here. So this thing is true. Then let's consider some subset. And now we want to define the representative of this proposition in this smaller subset. So it doesn'tize it. And this, because of the definition, I'm just going to write it. So because of the definition, this is going to be bigger than your original proposition. Now this, instead of writing delta del, this is, you can just write it like this. Yeah. It's the same. So this projection operator is bigger than your original one. Meaning that if you'd define, if you subtracted them, then you would get something that is bigger than 0. You just get some operator. Now, if you apply this guy to this entire expression, and rearranging a bit things, so because you want to define the value of this. Now this, you know, is 1. This can be either 0, 1. And this can be either 0, 1. Right? So obviously this is going to be 1. Can't be, you can't put 1 here, otherwise that would be 2. So what this means is that this guy also belongs to the subset which gives of the spectrum of this algebra, which gives value 1 to this projection operator. And this is for all of them that are in here. This would be valid. So what this means is that this restricted to V prime, so all of them that belong to your original one, is a subset of because if it belongs to that, then it's going to give value 1 to this. Therefore, it will belong to this. If then, it's a subset relation. OK, but what is this? Well, this is precisely the way in which the Persheaf maps are defined. So if you remember this guy, was defined by restriction. Where is this? So this combined with this is telling you the following. Which means this. Right, we're trying to show that the Presheaf maps are just the same, but now restricted to some subsets. So what this means is that now this is a well-defined sub-Presheaf of your state space. And in particular, because of that property, it's a Clopen sub-Presheaf. So this guy here is a Clopen sub-object of your state space. And it turns out that this is true for each proposition. You get something like that. So the collection of all propositions are, well, a subset, I suppose, of this, are all Clopen subobjects of your state space. Now, the importance is that this guy here forms a Hating algebra. So what we've showed is that your propositions, all your quantum propositions, now undergo a well-defined logic, which is a Hating algebra, which is distributive. And it's got the pseudo-complement, but it's still distributive and it's a logic.
This might be a question just because I don't know the background, but this stuff with like quantum logic using projections that like unknown, and didn't they have the problem that if they're only talking about projections, it's not distributive anymore?
Mm-hmm.
How did we get around it? How did we end up with something that's distributive?
Because of this guy, the sub-object of an object from an algebra that's distributive.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is that you kind of, you do consider projections, but you do that by defining them for each context and then getting a presheaf associated to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the collection of presheafs, because it belongs to that, is automatically distributed. So you're not just considering projection operators, but a collection of them such that they form a presheaf and they're distributed. I'm not quite sure what precise, I mean, as soon as you have that was the main point, really, of trying to define as a sub-object of this. Because in a topos, as soon as you have sub-objects of anything, you have 18 algebras, it's automatic.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore it's distributive. So that it was kind of going the other way around. So the aim was to try and define something that was a sub-object so that then you would get distributivity. And by identifying propositions like that, you get distributed. Okay. So let's see, if it's a Hating algebra, what are the logic operations in it? If you have two Clopen sub-objects, then you want to define the AND, sorry, the OR, going the other way around. And this, again, is defined context-wise. So it's quite simply the set theoretical operation. So that was easy. The same with the AND. Again, for each context. And then the pseudo-relative complement is a little bit more tricky one, but even this is for each context. So is the relative pseudo-complement in terms of sets. that's easy enough. So it's all those elements of the spectrum at V, such that for all subcontexts, if this guy belongs to S, then it will belong to T. Sorry. Now the negation, for the negation you replace this with the null element, and the null element here is basically the subobject which is empty for all sets, for all contexts, sorry. This at V is just empty set. And then you have the unit element, which is basically the entire thing for all contexts. So now if you replace this guy in here, then you get your definition of negation. Elements which belong to this, such that for anything smaller, then sorry, and this you can show as a Hayton algebra.
FT is this here?
Now the good thing of this is that it forms a Hayton algebra, apart from the fact that it is distributive, is also because you remember that the logical connectives were defined in terms of, so not the logic, sorry, the truth values were defined as elements of your truth object or subobject classifier. And those also formed a Hayton algebra. So what this means is that now we have on one side the collection of all propositions, which forms a Hayton algebra, and on the other side the collection of all truth values, which forms a Hayton algebra. They're both distributive, and now the valuation map would just be a kind of algebra map, well-defined algebra map between the two. Okay. So now a word on the actual interpretation of this Lesnarization, and then I'll give an example. So this Lesnarization is really important because it really allows you to define globally what a proposition is as a subobject of the state space, which then in turn tells you that this collection of propositions forms an algebra which is distributive. So it's actually important to understand really what it is. Well, I mean, mathematically we've seen it, but what does it really mean? Okay, so now we have a proposition, and this is some projection operator. And what you do is you Desnize it. So for each context, you Desnize it. Now you have two possibilities. Now this projection operator, because it maps on a subset of the spectrum of A, will belong to the spectral decomposition of A. So remember, in the discrete case, you had this. And the continuum, you have to define some integration. But so if this projects on some subset of the spectrum, it will belong, or a combination of certain elements that belong to a spectrum. So once you Desnize it, you have two possibilities. This guy belongs, still belongs to the spectrum of A, to the spectral decomposition. However, since this guy is bigger than the original one, the proposition will be more general. However, we'll still talk about A, because in the spectral decomposition, it'll just be a little bit more general. So it will be something like that. We're still talking about A, but it's more general. So that in this case, the process of dozenization really is a process of coarse graining of your proposition, but still referred to A. Another is that this guy here, obviously, the only other possibility, does not belong to spectral decomposition of A. However, it's still true that this relation holds. So this proposition here has to still represent a generalized proposition or a generalization of this guy. And normally, it will represent something as follows, where B is some function of A. So basically, this is roughly speaking, obviously, it doesn't really make sense, but it's a generalization of this proposition. So I don't know, this A has a certain value, as the square of A has a value in something much more general. So again, now this is a more general proposition. For example, taking the square of a value of something, which does not really talk about A as this one did, but talks about something a bit more general than A. But still conceptually, it's a generalization. This is just to understand what this dozenization tells you in kind of words rather than just mathematics. Okay, now let's just give an example. Oh, actually, I forgot to say something important. Okay, this is what it means. And because of the fact that dozenization happens for each context, you have this kind of two types of propositions. You have your global proposition, which is the one you started with, is this guy here, which eventually corresponds to a subresheaf. You have your global propositions. This guy's. And then you have your local, which are now the dozenized projection operators, which hold the possible coarse grainings of this proposition for each context. So it was like exactly how we defined the state space. And if you remember that the quantum state space was a kind of collection of local classical state spaces. Here, this proposition is not exactly classical, but again, a global proposition is a collection of local approximation of that proposition. Altogether, you have a presheaf. Okay, so the example, I'm just going to do this. So again, we're here. So in a four-dimensional Hilbert space, and we'll consider two spin particle or system, whatever. And we're interested in propositions regarding the value of the spin in the z direction. So again, we have the matrix representation that we did last time. So this was 1, 0, 0, 0. V2 is 0, 1, etc., etc. So in this representation, this guy here is an operator, which will be like this, meaning that it can have 2, 0, minus 2 values. Then we want to define a proposition which tells us that the value of the spin in the z direction lies in a certain interval. Obviously, because of this interval and because the only values are minus 2, 0, and 2, the only real possible value here would be 2. And an eigenstate for that would be this guy with associated projection operator. This guy here. So what this means is that this proposition is represented by this projection operator. It's the only one that projects in this subspace because it picks up value 2. So our proposition is this. Okay, now we need to, that's the global proposition. Now we need to define a presheaf which represents this global proposition by seeing how this global proposition is defined for each context. So it's kind of not case study, but kind of. So first of all, we pick an algebra, the maximum abelian von Neumann subalgebra. I think I defined last lecture, remember. Anyway, the one which is defined as a linear combination of all those projection operators. And we want to check what is the approximation of this proposition. In this case, it's easy because this algebra actually contains this proposition. So in this case, the designation does absolutely nothing. And then you go here. Well, I'll just write P1. And this will be all those elements in the spectrum which give value 1 to P1. Now, if you remember, the spectrum of this algebra because this algebra contains all 4x4 matrices with complex entry in the diagonal which are defined in terms of these guys, the only real elements are 4. Which are defined as follows. So what this means, this is very simple. The only element that you have here is lambda 1. Easy one. Okay, let's go in somewhere that does not contain that projection operator. Maybe a little bit more complicated. So let's go, for example, here. Now again, we want to dozenize this guy here. Now this guy, this algebra, because the linear combination of these three, does not contain this projection operator. So we need to find the one that is the smallest, which implies is implied by this guy. So the smallest, which is bigger. And this one is this guy here. Right. So now if you had to give a meaning to that, so P1 was this. What does this mean? Well, this would get eigenvalue 2, this would get minus 2. So what this proposition is a generalized version. It tells you that this is in minus 3, 1, or what was it? generalization is of the first type, but it's still a generalization. Okay, so then you go to the spectrum. You have to pick a subset. And this again is all those elements which belong to the spectrum of this algebra. And now give value 1 to this guy here. Okay, so first of all, what is this? This algebra, the spectrum of this algebra. Now this contains 3 free projection operators. So it'll contain 3 elements. So contain lambda 1 gives, no, sorry, does not contain lambda 1. Contains lambda 2, which gives value 1 to this guy and 0 all the rest. It will contain this one, and it will contain lambda prime 1. No? And this one will be the only one that gives 1 to this and 0 to all the rest. Meaning that here you have only one. It's precisely that one. Now let's go to even more general proposition.
See? For that SN, should that be positive 1 or minus 1?
Positive or minus?
Negative 3, comma 1. That looks like
a... Oh, sorry. Yes. Although, yes. Well done. Yeah, we're not taking the 0. Yeah, sorry, good. So let's go to even a more general proposition. So now, for example, go to V2. And you do the same thing, right? So you dozenize it. And this is going to pick this projection operator here. And this all, now this also picks the 0. So this could be something like that, for example. And now you've got the level of the spectrum. So first the spectrum of this algebra. Now this only contains 2 elements. It contains the one that gives value 1 to this and 0. And then it contains the element that gives value 1 to this guy and 0 to all the rest. So again, this guy here is simply... Now imagine you go to a context, say, Okay, so say you go to a context, say you have an algebra, some other algebra, whatever, such that one, it does not contain this, and 2, it doesn't contain anything that implies it. So for all so in this case, in this guy here, the dozenization would be the unit operator. Meaning, SZ has a value. That's what this guy means. And it's kind of trivially satisfied, right? Since, do you remember the definition of this was all those maps from your algebra to the complex number such that they give value 1 to the entity operator. So the proposition saying this has a value is always true. Because all the elements in here will give value 1 to this proposition. So in this case, the most generalized proposition is the entire subset. Okay, that was just a side thing. Okay, so now that we've defined all our propositions, you need to define the Presheaf maps. And this is easy enough, considering that we've got 1 element for each case. But so now you need to define the maps for each subalgebra, maps that bring elements of this subset to, for example, this guy. I'll only do 1 of them. Because these are still the local definitions. Right? Now you have to combine them all and define the Presheaf maps. So now, which was the margin? 2, 3. So because this is the case, then you have Presheaf maps going the other way. Or equivalent, this is the same as this guy, yeah? Now this only had 1 element. And this gave value 1 to P1 and 0 to all the rest. This guy also had only 1 element, and this guy here. Now, since this guy gives value 1 to this projection operator, and that projection operator is bigger, right, than P1, this map here will have to be mapped to the only one that gives value 1 to this. And so you can map it to this guy. And so on and so forth. I mean, this is kind of trivial because there are only 2. But, so this is actually. Because of this implication relation, and so on and so forth. So this really does define a well-defined presheaf, which represents a proposition. Is this clear? Ish. OK, I forgot to mention that the designization has some properties. Which I won't prove them because they're actually an exercise. And to be perfectly honest, the significance of some is not totally clear. But anyway, these are the most important ones, the following. That this. So the designization preserves the OR. But it does not preserve the AND. Sorry. Now you're going to have to show this. And it might be, I mean, we don't know this. This is still kind of a problem. It might be that this has something to do with the uncertainty relations, but it's not quite clear. But it might. I mean, it is a fact that it doesn't preserve it. What it actually means is unclear, and it could be that it's a way of defining uncertainty relations in this Tobos framework, but this is, I don't know if that's true. It looks like it, but I don't know if it's true. And then other properties that are here, but those you can look and prove for yourself. Okay. Now, one last thing that I actually didn't do the other time that we did the state space is to define the Cauchy-Specker theory in terms of Tobos theory. So we're going to have to step back a little bit. But in 10 minutes, we can do it. So now, instead of proposition, we're just going to consider an entire state space, and we're going to write the topos. How do you spell it? Okay. Now, first of all, remember what are elements. So in a topos, an element was a map from your terminal object to whatever object you define an element of. In this case, a state space, such that for all elements in your category, then the components, yeah, the components. So this guy was defined that for each context, it simply gave you the singleton, et cetera, et cetera. So this is a singleton, and it maps to this set. Let's call this gamma V. And it will pick out an element of this guy. So it will pick out some lambda, such that when you go to smaller contexts, then because it's a global element, you have the following property. So the way in which this element picks element in the spectral presheaf satisfy the presheaf maps. So, drawing. So here you have your section. So this is your terminal object, etc., etc., and this is your state space. Well, I'm not gonna. This is the spectrum of a sigma v prime. Let's call it v prime, etc. And that guy there, that map, gets an element here and picks out one here, gets an element here, picks out one here, such that the way in which these are related are through the presheaf maps. Now, a global element means that you get one for all of them, okay? Each single one of them. Now, what this means, is the following. Let's say you're here and you have some operator in here, some operator A, then that global section will pick an element which is going to give you a value of A. And in fact, this global element will pick an element in the spectrum of each of them which will give you a value of not exactly A, because sometimes it won't be A, but some function of A. What I'm saying is this, that this condition this being lambda of A, roughly speaking, of some function of A. I mean, this is not not exactly, just conceptual. Right. So this, you get an A which is in V, then you map and you pick an element of the spectrum, then you consider something smaller. So this A, say that this in V prime, let's say A does not belong to V prime. I mean, I haven't told you how to dozenize self-adjoint operators, but you can do it. But for now, just assume that there will be something which does belong to V prime. So what this map does, it takes a spectrum, an element of the spectrum of V, it maps it to V prime in terms of this, in terms of restriction, and then it applies to something which would be the generalized version of A in V prime. So you get this. And this is precisely the Funk condition. So this is telling you, the translation is that a function of a value of A is equal, so this would be the function, that would be the value, is equal to the value of a function of A. So in that sense, it's not, it's more conceptual, not. So this is Funk. So what this is telling you is that if this guy here had global sections, then you automatically would have the Funk condition. Meaning, and because it's global, what this is telling you that if you did have global section, you could always assign values to all quantities in a consistent way, such that the Funk condition is satisfied. And this is precisely what you cannot do because of the Cauchon-Speicher theorem. So the Tobos analog of the Cauchon-Speicher theorem is, this guy here is, that if the Hilbert space has dimension greater than 2, then your state space does not have elements. Which is, I mean, it's kind of, when we'll define states, so this actually is kind of important, because when you'll define states, so you can't, you know, in classical physics, state is an element. Well, Hilbert space is a kind of element. This guy does not have elements. So states will be something a bit more general. So, but this is the Cauchon-Speicher. And you can see now why, because if you did have global section, then you can always evaluate any projection operator. Any self-adjoint operator. Okay, we have a state space with elements. Any questions? Okay. No, no, no. It's all here.